can thank you because every way thank you. Every way is for other people and noise. Thank you.
Aloha. Okay, here we go. Aloha. And welcome to Aquarian Radio at AquarianRadio.com. Please a few minutes, Jeff, while I do an intro. And I'm your host, Janet Kira Lesson, with my co-host, Dr. Sasha Lesson, and my other co-host, Karen Christine Patrick. And today we have a very special guest, Jeffrey LaPere. And this is an episode of We the Anunnaki, and we're going to be talking about Anunnaki and modern society. So Jeffrey was born in the UK, in Ukraine, in 1963. He served in Soviet Airborne Military from 81 to 83. He became a refugee to the United States in 89. He served in U.S. Army Intelligence from 91 to 2001. Uh-oh, hold on 1 second. Getting feedback. Hold on 1 second. Here we go. Having a little feedback here. Okay, 1 second. I figured that out. Okay, Jeffrey. Let me go back to talking about that.
Yes, I hear you.
Okay. So hold on. I'm going to read a little bit more about you. After serving in the Russian Airborne Military, Jeffrey became a refugee to the United States, and then he served in the U.S. Army Military Intelligence, where he worked with a John Q, who worked for the CIA. John exposed him to the history of the Anunnaki and their possible role in current events. He told Jeff that they would soon return and begin a war with each other that would determine the ownership of this planet. And because they own different world territories, local populations will follow them in global war and the further division of the Earth. John Q told Jeff that I should be prepared by studying as much as I could and advised me to join Masonic Lodge. I have been studying history in general and Anunnaki history in particular ever since. The coming global war between the Anunnaki gods, Enlil and Enki, through their offspring, Ninurta, who represents Russia, and Marduk, who represents the United States, Jeff also spent 2 years in South America researching ancient archaeology. And I have more about Jeff on our website on Aquarian Radio. But to summarize, compilation of my studies has led me to believe that the coming war will involve Russia, which is represented by Ninurta and Enlil, and the United States, which is represented by Marduk and Enki. And Jeff says, I believe the Kremlin serves as a temple to Ninurta. Russia has its protection. I also believe that a temple to Marduk must be built in this country, meaning the U.S., to receive the full blessing and protection. Area 51 is only a small part of this project. If the war begins and the temple is not built, the United States will surely suffer. And there's more. Okay, Dr. Lesson, we're all on standby. Jeff, we're going to start by you going first, and for about the next 10, 15 minutes, tell us about yourself and your history and your research. Want to say something, Tosh?
What made you decide to be a whistleblower?
Okay, so take it away, Jeff. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yes, I hear you.
Go ahead, Jeff. You want to tell us about yourself and your research and what you have uncovered?
Yes, talking about myself, you already said pretty much everything. I born in Soviet Union, in the Ukrainian part, and I was refugee in the United States. My research show, when I start my in United States military intelligence, I work with people from different agencies, and one individual, John, he worked in CIA. He tell me a lot about all this Anunnaki. I never heard before. So for me, it sounds kind of funny. What you talking about? He said, Jeff, you don't know nothing yet. and he explained me many things. And after that, I researched by myself, and I found some kind of link. Well, first, when I researched about Anunnaki, I found we can read this in different various books. They divide Earth. They divide continents and countries. So we know that. Then, as a military intelligence, I always like think, well, if they divide, what is the next? Which countries belong to whom? And this guy from CIA, John, he actually tell me many times, he said, Jeff, they will be back. They will come back and they start a huge global war between themselves and people as they servants, slaves or servants, people will involve, of course, in that war also. But primarily, of course, they fight between each other. And then I think, well, okay, who will fight against whom? We know how they divide the world. And in my study, in my research, I noticed one very interesting, very important point. Since start of humanity civilization, every single city, town, empire, country, territory, it's like prerequisite before they got starting to help them, they have to build temple of that God.
Yes.
Without temple, God not even talk to those people. It's like prerequisite. You have to build temple of my name. It's happened in Israel, we know, like God Jehovah, he said to Israelites, you have to build temple of my name. So you have
let me ask you about temples then, for one subject. What do you think there is, why are temples important locations, like the Ark of the Covenant between humans and the Anunnaki? What is the significance of building a temple? Who's supposed to build a temple? And once the temple's built, how do you know who you're talking to?
Well, you probably know who you're talking to, because if you talk to wrong God, at least it's not going to work, or your country be destroyed. Well, we know for sure which country and territory belong to which God. So
is that information about who owns what, does that come from John to the CIA person? Does that come from your own personal investigation?
Well,
or how do you know who
Well, both. Like I said, he started that conversation. He gave me like initial knowledge in that field. But later I was studying myself. I not always talk to guy from CIA or NSA or whatever. I start my own research. A reason John start conversation with me, because he said when we work together, I work in military intelligence, he work in CIA, he noticed, and later he tell me, he said, Jeff, you have very excellent, like, analytical skill. You can get, like, some small puzzles, small details, analyze, and put them together. So he gave me, like, just initial knowledge, initial conversation. And then I study for myself, and as we know, all countries, all cities, it's prerequisite, they have to have temple of their own God. Okay, in opposite, I will say something, in opposite of that, when whatever country, whatever ethnicity you can say, or whatever empire, when they invade territory of the enemy, very first thing what they supposed to do, it must be done, no choice. It must be done. Very first thing, they have to destroy temple of any god.
Okay. So that's
we know that from
the ancient times through the mark, the first thing they do when they get in there is they destroy temples.
Yes, exactly. But also, you see, many people these days, it's so many atheists, many people not believe in God at all, especially Anunnaki. Many people say, oh, this is nonsense. Because modern civilization, they lose in connection with God, they lose in connection with nature. But we know they exist. We know they exist. Last 2 years, I was traveling in South America. I see all those places. I was studying and research, like Machu Picchu and Antetokounmpo, and so on. We know Anunnaki exist because it's no way 10, 12, 15,000 years ago people built, you know, objects like structure, like pyramids, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's no way. Somebody has to be crazy to believe Stone Age humans can believe such huge objects. It's absolutely
right.
Not them. 10, 15, 20,000 years ago, what people supposed to be like Stone Age people, how they can build pyramids? It's only one pyramid of Cheops in Egypt consists of almost 2.5 million stone blocks. Can you imagine just cut, polish, put together? Another thing, we all know strongest, hardest metal in Egypt, it was bronze. We all know bronze was strongest metal in Egypt. Somebody has to be crazy to believe Stone Age cavemen with bronze tool, they cut pyramids. Okay, why are you telling this? Because we know Anunnaki exists. Why they left Earth, we don't know yet. Probably they have good reason for that. But all of them, they say, we will be back. Jesus, before he descended to heaven, he said, I will return. Mayans god Quetzalcoatl, Incas god Viracocha, they all said, we will be back. So if we believe God, why we not believe he be back? Okay, anyway. So
Let me ask you a question, and we'll go around and ask you questions. So the CIA fellow, it seems like he was trying to get you activated to do things. And he came in with very specific information about they're going to come back and start a war. Do you think he was leaking intelligence information to you? That he was on the inside track and he actually knew that there is this war pending and he somehow attributed to the Anunnaki themselves?
Okay, at that time, probably it was true. At that time, he probably was leaking information. But these days, it's not valid anymore. Because we can find all this information on website. It's millions of books, website, everything. It's not secret anymore. At that time, when I start, it's like about 25 years ago or so.
Mm-hmm.
In the beginning, beginning of 1990s I start. Yes, time, I guess it's probably he was leaking information, because, like, I consider myself smart guy. I read a lot. I study a lot. I never even heard about that. I never heard about aliens, about Anunnakis. I never heard any of those. So that time, probably he was leaking some information. But these days, we can talk openly because it's not secret information anymore.
Okay. Dr. Lesensash, you have a question, or Karen, or feedback?
No, but it's just interesting. I'm thinking about it. Evidently, FDR had an encounter with some Anunnaki, and he wanted to just tell everybody. He wanted to go public, and his people said, "Well, let's see what the public reaction would be. We'll set up a test case." And so they got Orson Welles's to do H.G. Wells's War of the Worlds, and scared people and made this big scene. But the whole audience was FDR, who said, "Oh yeah, go ahead, let's keep it all secret now." And so that's why the stuff that you're going to report on this show has been kept from the public. But now's the time for it to all be to all come out.
I was looking at the Kremlin, and so you're saying that each that these are temples to the gods. So the Kremlin, do you think, is a temple? And which of the gods is at the temple, if it's a temple?
Okay. You know, when we just talk about, like, some hypothetically, some hypothetical stuff, yes, Anunnaki exist, yes, you know, this, like, kind of like a hypothesis. It's like fantasy. So I always want kind of like a proof of that. Not just say, yeah, they exist, and guy next to me say, well, they not exist. Prove it. So I always was looking for evidence, proof. And when I start to study, learn all these things, well, first of all, it drew my attention when we see ancient, like, clay tablets, like, we see all this picture of different gods. I noticed next to Ninurta, son of Enlil, Ninurta in Greek mythology, he is Apollo. Next to him, two-headed eagle. And this picture, like, thousands years old, and this, like, exact copy of modern Russian seal, what they use on, you know, like, it's great seal of Russia. They use on flag everywhere, and even on Kremlin, before communists came, for hundreds of years, two-headed eagle, it was on top of Kremlin. Now, later, they changed for star, communist star, so now they talking about to bring back the two-headed eagle. And many other examples, like, for example, we know Ninurta of Apollo, he was the god of thunders, of lightnings, of striking. Modern day, it looks like he was god of missiles, god of like artillery, like continental missiles. And when we compare these days, Russia, they have best missiles in the world. We all know that. So it's another resemblance of Ninurta or Apollo. Another thing, you know, we know number, like, all those Anunnakis, they have divine numbers. like highest
right.
number 50 have ammo. Next one, Enlil and Nimurta, they have same number 50. And when you read, when you study about Kremlin, from very beginning of Kremlin until today, people, when somebody enter Kremlin, they have to bow to Kremlin 50 times. So you see, it's like become like pattern. It's so much resemblance, so much coincidence. Then I start think, well, if United States belong to family of MT and primarily to Marduk, so United States also have to have temple, but United States don't have temple. You know, compared to ancient times, this like huge unrespect to God. First of all, it's huge unrespect to the God. Second of all, to get full, complete blessing and help from God, it has to be temple of that God.
And so let me ask you about a little bit more about temples, and then I want to give Aaron and Sasha a chance to ask questions. So what makes a temple? Are you still there?
Yes, I hear you.
Okay. What makes a temple? Because we have some pretty grandiose buildings in the United States. You ever look at the Mormon temples? They look like rocket ships, and there's some incredibly beautiful and gorgeous churches and throughout England.
Churches not temples. Churches have nothing to do with temples. And churches, it's more modern structure. It's Christianity. It has nothing to do to original temples. And you see, we already know United States, it's country of Marduk. Another proof, like we all probably heard this, like everywhere we can read, United States is New Babylon, or United States is reincarnation of Babylon. So, if United States belonged to Marduk, and Marduk was god of the Babylon, and Babylon translates from ancient language means gate of God, what United States probably is. So it has to be a real temple. It has to be
a serpent mound. What about serpent mounders? What about serpent mounders? Some of those are those temples from Anunnaki, particularly from Marduk's clan.
Yes.
So that is an Anunnaki temple, the serpent mound, probably, and all the mound builders might have.
Of course, because Anunnaki, who control the world, they just under different name, different representation, but they still same individuals, of course, and same thing you know about United States. Of course, this is my research. I not try to make somebody believe that. It's just my research. It's up to you, up to people, believe or not. But we all know all countries, all empires, all civilizations, always they have temple of their God. And United States don't have. Because it's not temple. We know it's nothing in the United States, anything like that. It's like some small nonsense copies of some churches or something, but it's not like a real temple what it has to be. Temple, like from ancient time, temple, it's place for worship of God and place to live for that God.
Where would you do it? If you were going to choose a place, and to raise a temple, where would you choose in the United States?
Okay, I understand. My study and research show best place, actually ideal place, it's supposed to be some kind like middle to north part of Arizona for many reasons. Because when we take a number of latitude, like a real temple in Babylon, latitude of northern parallel, northern latitude, in a real temple, it was 32.32. It's almost like Masonic degree. It's what I am. I am 32nd degree Mason. And founder of this country, George Washington, he was 32nd degree Mason. So this country is like God's chosen place. Okay, this is one thing. Another thing, if you look northern Arizona, climate, weather, everything, it's very, very similar.
What's
very
there?
Excuse me?
What's there on the map at 3333?
I don't know. You want me to look it
up? Yeah,
look
it up in the map. Let's see what's there.
What's it, 33?
No,
yeah. What's it near?
I believe best place, ideal place, be somewhere close to Sedona. Because
Sedona.
It's ancient holy place, and even like Native American tribes, they have many holy sites in that area. And I read even like time of Lemuria, it's very, very ancient holy sites in that area. Another thing, well, maybe it's just my personal research. I mean, maybe it means nothing, but it's what I research. Okay, when Jesus Christ, put this way, we know New Testament was written in Greek language. We know that. It was written in Greek language. So when the New Testament was translated, well, let's say to English language, it has to be translated completely. But what we read, it's kind of like not absolutely complete translation. Okay, I explain what I mean. Jesus Christ, he said, I am Alpha and Omega. In Greek language, Alpha and Omega is first and last letters of alphabet. So, if we translate completely to English, then we have to put first and last letters of English alphabet, what is AZ, what stands for Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
Like I say, it's many others. I just, like, on top of my head, I cannot remember all of them, you know, but like my friend from CIA told me, I have very good analytical research and analytical skill. So I was researching this for many years. I can say for 25 years. After I met him, I start researching this, and I see, you know, all this, it's like hidden signs, like AZ stands for Arizona. Another thing, I tell you, when I was a little boy, I live in Soviet Union, I remember I read in one of the Russian magazines, like travel magazine, I read one article, and I remember that article very well because it's kind of like stick in my memory. What it says, it was that article was about America, and that article was about Native American tribes and legends, and Native Americans who lived in Arizona, it's what I read in that article. Native Americans who lived in Arizona, they have very, very ancient knowledge and belief. This plateau, northern Arizona plateau, safest and strongest place in entire Northern America. They have belief if entire Northern America go underwater, only place which will survive Northern Arizona, like central to Northern Arizona, this plateau. So I remember this since I was boy. So you see, all these small pieces by itself, it probably means nothing. But when you put all these pieces together, we're solving the greatest puzzle ever exists.
I wanted to give Karen a chance to speak. I'm sorry to have you hanging there so long, Karen. What would you like to say, questions or feedback? Go ahead, your turn, Dave.
Well, there's a very expansive potential here on questions. No, I was looking at maps and kind of getting the gist of what he was talking about. And I wanted to go back to this idea of a temple. I think you trailed off right when I hope you were saying that the temple wasn't just going to be necessarily a worship place, but also a dwelling, like a place for the when the gods come back for them to actually dwell.
Yes, exactly.
So are we talking, I mean, I'm thinking of these cathedrals where they have ceilings that are, you know, 60 feet high. Is this, are we going to need to make this temple have a very tall ceiling? Are these very tall beings? That would be one question. And then also, the location that you're talking about also suggests that it needs to be high in elevation because, like you said, it would survive, you know, tsunamis or the water table rising. So I would think if they're coming back in a spaceship situation that they would need a high elevation. It would seem if you're coming from space to the Earth, it's easier to find mountains and locations from the top, so to speak, than where we tend to dwell, which is down in the valley areas along the coast.
Exactly. And when they come back to Earth, like you said, they need like landing area for spaceship to land. United States already have that. We have that.
Yes.
In Area 51.
Yes. We also
this
have
Area 51. So Area 51 is already a place for taking spaceship for landing spaceship for Anunnaki. So we have already all this huge secret area for landing of Anunnakis. Only last puzzle what we need, temple. And temple must be exact copy of a real temple. It's not something enormous huge. It's only 91 meter tall. It's 91 meter tall. It's very, for modern technology, it's just a couple years of work. It's very easy, can be done. It's nothing absolutely extraordinary, nothing special. It can be done with modern technology very easy. It's only 91 meter tall. It's not something like, you know. By the way, I want to mention, it has nothing to do to a Bible legend about Tower of Babel. It has nothing to do to that.
Okay.
Because
so
that
do you have
just,
plans?
That is
would
just
you
story.
Have? Yeah. Would you have like plans or architectural drawings? Which temple do we look at on Earth that would be the copy? I mean, what part of that is available?
What? I'm sorry. Can you repeat, please?
Yes. So you said it 90 meters tall.
Uh-huh.
Do you have floor plans or building design available for what this temple should look like?
Okay. I have answer for this question. In the United States, we have best in world sumerologists and people who study Babylon and ancient civilization. For example, in Berkeley and Chicago. Those people, they have PhD in Assyriology, Sumerology, and Babylon, ancient Babylon. So if, let's say, you decide, or whoever decide to build, first thing, we need to hire those people, because those people, they have PhD. They know exact inch by inch how it looks, how tall, what kind of structure, everything. So then we will hire, of course, I am not engineer. I am only military intelligence guy. I don't have PhD in engineering or something like this. But we have people. We have people who know all this, and best place is Berkeley, University of Berkeley and Chicago.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Dr. Lesson.
I was talking to some people about Hopi history, and they were saying that the ETs that saved the Hopi brought them to this place near Sedona, which was a place of the waters because of ice was melting from Greenland. And it put them in a place that was fenced in and told them they had to stay there until it was okay, but it was already stocked with game and everything. And then their first task was to gather survivors. And so then they were transported in the ET, the Hopi say, in their ET's craft to their present location. But it was that place in Sedona. That's where that's the story for me that resonates with your local thinking of that's where it should go. So that's really interesting.
Yes, this area is not far from big city Phoenix. It's huge city,
uh-huh.
Phoenix. It's not that far, and it's close to Sedona. What even modern people, they have many people who moving over there. You know about Sedona. Modern worship place, like holy place. So people know it's holy place, but
yes.
They don't know why it's holy. And I can tell why it's holy, because that is place where it's supposed to be temple of our god Marduk.
Now, I found an article on 33 degrees on Red Ice Creations, and this one seems to be a little bit dark, but it says that the... 33rd degree has long been associated with Freemasonry, and this dovetails with a belief in the importance for reasons until now unknown of the geographical location known to cartographers as the 33rd parallel north latitude. And they said that there's a Masonic building in Tucson, and led a writer to investigate out of curiosity upon what latitude the city of Tucson in the state of Arizona happened to be located. But it turned out that the 33rd parallel ran through a small town of Florence, Arizona. And the Arizona Department of Corrections Maximum Security Prison is located there and contains on this ground Arizona's death row. Anyway, the article goes on and it correlates these death rows and prisons on the 33 degree across the world, including Abu Ghazi. Where is that? Yeah. So they have a negative. Yeah, Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq. So going around saying that there's death rows in prisons around the world.
I understand what you're saying. I know area of Sedona is not 32nd degree. I know that. it's somewhere like 43, 44 degrees. But
okay.
I can just tell you, well, Arizona is other side of globe from original Babylon. And, well, only I can say probably our Lord Marduk, he will forgive us if we if we build like maybe 1 degree northern. Yeah, I'm not saying like it has to be like exact. That'd be, of course, ideal, but I think 1-2 degrees, it'd be okay. He will forgive us.
Great.
Yeah.
Did you have something to say, Sash?
Oh, it's just
that,
yeah. It's
and actually talking about Tucson, I belong 32nd degree. I am Scottish Rite 32nd degree. I belong in Tucson. So Tucson, that is my Scottish Rite location. My family lives. Yeah, now I am divorced, unfortunately, but it's where my family lives. They live in Tucson.
Okay. Sash, you wanted your question?
It's sort of interesting. For a long time, Marduk's agents, there was 300 of them that came back after Anu abdicated in favor of Nannar, and Nannar became king of Nibiru, and he basically... his agents, Nannar's agents, sort of assassinating Marduk's and Marduk's back and forth, and they infiltrated the heads of everything. But what has happened recently, many people have come forth with Anunnaki who directly told them, it's over, it's absolutely over. The Federation has stepped in and let us know that it's time to stop this warring and to cooperate in bringing in this temporary small Satya Yuga, this time of rebuilding. And it's really perfect because Enki and Ninurta, together, were the ones that really helped Sumer recover and after the flood. And so their cooperation, ultimately, the United States and cooperate, I think, with Russia. I think we really could make this a lot better world.
I wanted to invite Karen to add her information that she knows from the A.R. Borden's Linkage Institute. Karen, could you chime in and illuminate everybody?
Oh, wow. I'm trying to get my head around how to combine those things. Okay, Man, I can't believe I'm going to say this again today because I haven't really said this very much about my interaction with A.R. Borden, but I happen to say it in a group that are those of us who discuss these things, and I'll just go ahead and say it tonight, is that there one of the things A.R. Borden said to me, it was in the chat, so I can't confirm exact details, but that the kind of circles of people he ran in, and I believe in his military side of the circles he ran into, a research side, deep research side, is that there was a group of people who were very much seeking out Marduk. They were trying to make that connection, maybe even swearing some kind of oath. And like I said, I don't have details, but in our military, there are various military-industrial complex, I should say. It's not just the military. It's sort of part of the whole thing. There are cults, but I would say these cults reflect all the way back to the ancient mystery schools of, you can literally go back to Rome, back to, you know, back to the those old cultures, pre-Greek cultures, I would say Pelagian cultures, and they had these various mystery schools. They had the mystery school of Attis, the mystery school of Cybele, the mystery school of Mithras, and a lot of the mystery schools served a couple functions. One big function that they served was to keep these very, very old caches of history alive some way. And so that you had to be kind of initiated in, and you would be told these different degrees of information depending on, you know, various tests of your worthiness. And we would simply not have this information at all anywhere, especially during times of persecution of these various
you know, they were kind of religions and, you know, information at the same time. And these, all this different mystery information alive. And, you know, kind of digging under the surface of the founding of the United States, it gets pretty weird when you look around the early founding of the United States, all the cities and territories and towns. And you look at, I think what he's talking about, a clue for what he's talking about would be to look at the great seals. I was just looking at the great seal of New York, the great seal of all the state seals, the cities big enough to matter will have a seal which is coded information. And it very much harkens back to the time of the gods, you know, and it's going to be one of the gods, the Anunnaki gods, but the Anunnaki gods had different names. So Sibel probably was connected to Ninma. I don't have the exact, you know, who's who, but that's the best place to go, tqspeaks.com. Thank you, Sasha, because there's your who's who list of just who the Anunnaki were, and it was very complex, their pantheon and cast of characters. Then on top of that, each culture has their own names for them, so they would carry different names at different times and different cultures. But these groups are still around, and they are part of some people's religions. They're part of some cultures' indigenous population, or they're part of the intelligentsia, or they're part of the old ruling families, the 13 families that literally go, that, you know, back to Roman era, and then past that it goes back to pre-Greek, and it goes back to Atlantis, and ultimately, again, all roads lead to the Anunnaki, actually. You end up back in the Atlantean times, and then before that, the Anunnaki. So this information is kept alive, and then I think it's translated. When you have a place, be established, I believe the Masonic influence is that they know, as higher up you go, what piece of land belongs to whom, you know. And we have all this era of here with the conquistadors here in New Mexico, we have these groups that would say, I claim the land, you know, for the Queen of Spain, you know, and to plant the flag, that sort of thing. And the fact of the matter is there was, I'm part Native American, so I always had this humorous thought in my mind of, I'm discovering you. You know, it's like, this is, we're discovering this, you know, from Europe, and it's like, there's a 11 million, you know, so 20 million people already here, you know, like, well, thank you for discovering us. But I mean, ultimately, there's a battle of cultures. There's 11 million Native Americans killed from the time, from Columbus forward, you know, with a huge amount of wars and diseases and all kinds of things that decimated the Native American population. There were ostensibly 500 nations. You can look it up, think it's a book, 500 nations of Native Americans. And many of those tribes had a memory way back to the Anunnaki days and the times when their space ancestors came here. So Americans are probably the most clueless people on the planet as far as our ancient roots. We're about as deep as yesterday as far as history. I mean, and it's kind of a purpose. It's kind of to keep us manageable, you know, and going to work and fighting wars. But we, you know, whenever you're somewhere, and I've learned this from indigenous people, when you go somewhere, talk to the people, those people first, if you want to know the history, because they have the stories. And then what happens is, just like planting that flag, the scientists come and we're discovering you. So they'll come to these indigenous lands that have had their own history for thousands of years passed on through the tribal lore, and they'll give it a completely different story. They'll change the name, they'll change the timeline, they'll say something's, you know, 1,000 years old when it's probably 10,000 years old, and there you go. And so I think he's onto something here, looking at these places and getting the deep history of these places that we're at here on the North American continent. We don't know that much, not really. So that's just my comment right now.
Okay, Sasha.
Yes,
saying it back to Jeff.
Let her guess.
Yes, okay, go ahead, Jeff, and then back to
Sasha. Excuse me.
Go ahead,
yeah,
go ahead,
what I want to
speak,
say, what I want to say, us, I mean U.S., United States, like you said, we young as a country, but we smart and strong. Remember, we children of Enki and Marduk, those Anunnaki who have greatest wisdom in the world, even Enlil, even though all Anunnakis, they come to them and ask for some kind of technology, some kind of knowledge, some kind of treatment. Like, for example, especially, of course, Enki, even Marduk, he was asking his father Enki, he said, "Father, you teach me all knowledge and wisdom, only you didn't teach me how to resurrect dead." So United States inherit all this knowledge and wisdom. And we have to keep that way, we have to go that way, and to be complete, we have to build temple of Marduk. It has to be done. We have no choice. It has no choice, because if you see history, entire human civilization, every small town, every country, every empire, it must be done. Temple of their own God.
Josh, want to say something, then I'm next.
Well, it's kind of interesting what I get directly from people that have the fractile of Enki within them. I'm getting very clearly the messages from Enki. I don't want your worship. The temple is to commune with each other. I respect you humans, and you respect me, and we can talk with love in our hearts, and don't worship me. You have much to offer also.
Right. The whole concept of worship, which Gardner, Lawrence Gardner, said it really is a warping of the term workship. You know, what is your work? And so I'm really wondering if that was kind of a twisting. What I see is that it's time for us to balance, you know, humanity and meet with the Anunnaki as equals in the Federation. And that's what I was asking Karen to try to explain, to that the end of the wars are over, that A.R. Borden met with the Anunnaki, Michael Lee Hill met with the Anunnaki. We have people, human beings, that have had meetings with the Anunnaki, and they're starting to come down and ask us, you know, what do we care about? What do we think about? That's what I see as the next step in the evolution of how we go from this primitive slave species, and we have people waking up, and they are threads of consciousness of the various Anunnaki, their avatars, you know, like Michael Lee Hill and other people. We keep getting people to say, "I identify with Marduk or Enki or Enlil." It happens all the time on our shows. And so, go ahead. What you want to say?
Which is Marduk and Inurja are cousins, and they wish to put their arms around each other and forgive each other and cooperate in bringing in a peaceful, loving, creative, artistic world.
So my question for you, Jeff, is, are the Anunnaki, you know, they get mixed up with the reptilians, they get mixed up with the Archons. What has your research shown? Are the Anunnaki pure humanoids, you know, some variation on the human species, or are they indeed draconian, reptilian?
I understand the question. I understand the question. Okay, first thing what I want to mention is about worship. I not mean we have to become fanatics, you know, like religious fanatics and become fundamentalists. No. When I say temple have to be built, have to be done, and let for people to choose. If somebody wants to pray, worship, do some kind of scientific research, place of dwelling for Marduk. It's all kind of wide people like choosing for themselves what to do. we don't have like every all country have to like go and worship. No, it's not what I mean. It has to be as a respect, as a complete puzzle. And I'm sorry, your second question. Okay, if that's
Oh yeah, I wanted to know.
Yes.
What the Anunnaki from your research look like? Are they purely like a humanoid form? Some people say they're reptilian. Do they look reptilian, or do they just have reptilian brain like humans?
Okay. This question, very easy question. This question, very simple and very easy question. When we read Bible says very simply, God created man and woman on his image and likeness.
Right.
So look at each other and you see Anunnaki. We create like them. You know, when somebody fantasize and say they reptiles, they this, they that, it's making me laugh. Where people get that nonsense from? Read in Bible, at least, read in Bible, God created man and woman on his image and likeness. So look at each other. Maybe you're not smart enough like them, probably not. Maybe you're not tall like them. So they, I can say they more perfect, we less complete, but we create on their image and likeness. Just look at each other and you see Anunnaki.
Now I'll make this my last question unless something else sparks me. But you're saying somebody has to build this temple. So who's building it? What does it look like? Are there architectural plans? Has the site been identified within Sedona or wherever it is on the 33 or 34 degree latitude?
Okay, Temple of Marduk is actually Etemenanki or Esagila. Esagila is like a little complex, and Etemenanki is actually the temple itself. Who is the beneficiary number one? U.S. government. So I would say U.S. government, they beneficiary, the first beneficiary, and they who have money to do that. I can do, you can do. So, of course, U.S. government is the ideal, beneficiary and who have money. If not, well, it's probably Anunnaki will help us somehow. Enki and Marduk, I believe they will help somehow to research and study how it can be done.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Karen.
But of course, U.S. government, and remember, first person who talked to me about all these things, guy who worked for CIA. So these people in CIA, they know that. They know that. Well, maybe actually, no. Maybe they know, not maybe, they know about Anunnaki, they know all this what we're talking about, except probably they don't know yet temple has to be built, because this is only my personal research and study. Nobody from NSA, CIA tell me this is my personal research and study. So probably we need to share with CIA, NSA, what they don't know. And before I forgot, when we were talking about how Anunnaki looks like, I won't mention all these humanoids, all these creatures looks like reptiles or humanoids.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell only one thing about those creatures. you remember when Gilgamesh was traveling with his friend Enkidu for spaceport? You remember they was meeting all kind of creatures. And Enkidu himself, he was creature. He not human, mm-hmm. he not animal. They are robots. They are artificials. So all these, some kind like all these humanoids, they probably looks like they looks, but they not any kind of like real flesh. It's probably some kind of robot, cyborg, you know, something like you remember that movie Terminator. So they have some kind of, it's artificial creature, can say like robot, but a real.
In the story of Gilgamesh, they tear apart one of the, Gilgamesh and Enkidu tear apart one of these things they thought was a bull, and it's full of springs and levers.
Bull of heaven.
It was a robot.
You remember they was fighting with Humbaba. Humbaba, it's creature that guard those forest, holy forest, would guard that space port in Lebanon.
Yeah.
His name Humbaba. Artificial creatures.
My basic question for you, Jeff, is how do we get past, we have to get past, rather than crank up our enmity or rivalry with Russia and the NERDA, how can we synergize and co-create a better world rather than just do more fighting?
Well, I understand your question. I not say let's fight. I don't want fight. But we need to protect ourselves. When somebody, Russia or China or all kind of terrorists, if somebody attack us, we need to protect ourselves. I'm not saying let's go and fight, but we have to protect ourselves. And from very ancient time, as humanity exists, number one protection, it's temple of their God. So when I say temple of God has to be built, it's not to create more wars or something. It's all about to protect our country, this country. We cannot worry about China, Russia, Zimbabwe, you know, because we not live there. We live in this country. We have to worry about this country, how to protect this country. And if you remember Anunnaki from Enki family, most of the time they was victims. Most of the time they was victims. They was chased like out of country, out of continent. That reason why Marduk moved to Egypt, and he was known as Amon Ra, or Ra, God of Sun. Then they have to go to America. You know, they usually victims. They not create all these wars. They just victims. And United States, I can say, well, I don't want to say United States victim, but if Temple of Marduk not be built, United States very easy can be victim, you know, because we have so many enemies around the world, you know.
Oh, yeah, your friend Chris is there. Does he want to say something before we end the show?
What I want to say, I will tell my email and telephone number. If anybody will email me, contact me, more than welcome. I like very much to create new friends, new like thinkers, you know, to discuss more. And I want to say my email, jefflotter7@gmail.com or jefflotter7. jefflotter7@gmail.com and my telephone 832-260-9396.
Okay, I'll put that on the website so you can get people can contact you.
Okay, yes, please.
I will do that.
Yes, it's what we need. This is what we need to communicate.
Excellent. Well, we're going to begin to wrap up this show here, and I'm going to let Karen do her final question or comments, and then Sasha, Dr. Lesson, and then myself, and then Jeff, you can just say the final
question. I'm sorry. Chris, my friend who helped me to find your radio, he's next to me. Chris, he's next to me, and he won't say thank you to you.
Okay. Hi, Chris. You want to come on and say hi?
Just for a second. My role in this has just been mostly as a facilitator. I believe in in Jeff's belief in what he's doing, and to find somebody like that in this day and age is, I think, pretty rare. So I just want to thank you guys for bringing him on and letting him tell a little bit of his story, and hopefully some people can contact him that have the same interest to get these things together. I happen to agree with everything that all of you are saying, actually, and really appreciate the research that Sasha has done. And Karen, I'm not familiar, but I hope to find some things out about you, and I'll do some research on you. And again, just thanks for letting Jeff come on the radio.
Thank you, Chris.
Oh, you're most welcome.
You helped me to find these great people, this radio. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Janet.
Thank you. Okay, Karen, final words or your goodbye?
I'll make a final statement. This is a very intriguing idea. Where I'm sort of like coming to an understanding, and kind of goes like this. One of the things I hope to talk about AR is something that he was saying there to the very last before he was gone from us, was the idea that humanity needed to find its own collective identity. This was a problem for planet Earth, is the Earthlings were not at the table where decisions were being made about us. That we were sort of a child race of the Anunnaki, and that we've always been kind of managed. But, you know, children do grow up, and eventually I believe that a fractal of a person or a human is a fractal of a planet or a world. And as a human grows up and eventually has to go through an adolescent period and take on adult responsibilities and to be responsible for themselves, which we ought to acknowledge that, you know, at a certain point you're responsible for yourself. Is the same feeling that I have that Earth humans need to find their identity, and this is the hardest thing for us to find out who we are. It's almost like an adoptive child trying to figure out who am I, you know, who are my parents, this story. So this was something AR was on about quite a bit, of the fact that he would go to these meetings and humanity, you know, they were basically being the representatives of humanity at these various meetings, but it was more of an observational role, not necessarily a decision-making process. Now, we have world leadership. I'm dubious of the concern that they have for the entire planet and each and every person, because it seems like human provisioning is unequal and uneven. And I think that's one of the reasons why
we need to come together as humanity and have our own voice at our, you know, those councils that make decisions about us. We should be at our own table, so to speak. What I sort of, echoing that in this idea of a meeting place where our representative deity or Anunnaki being or however that works out, is that, you know, in America, let's just say the United States of America right now, is having an identity crisis. I think it's reflected in our election cycle that we're having right now. We are a nation of people from everywhere, as well as the people that are here originally, Native American people. And as a result, we have a beautiful diversity that literally represents the whole planet. But we also kind of have an identity crisis of who we are. We were given, you know, the manifest destiny identity of our founding fathers, so to speak, but it may not be holding together good enough. How do we find unity in diversity? So as near as I can tell, the best analogy I could think of listening to this is sports teams. And I know it sounds crazy, but I used to be in Seattle, and I was a fan of the Mariners and a fan of the Seahawks. You know, I've actually worked a block away from both stadiums. And it's an identity. You know, it's a city identity where, you know, everybody's like, go Hawks, go Mariners. It gives you something to talk about, you know, instead of just the weather. I mean, it's a thing. And in the idea that maybe we need an infusion of an identity, if one of these beings came to commune with us in any way, Marduk or Iki is an interesting choice, because I just went through a study of the Anunnaki and the moon, and what nation went to the moon? Well, it was the United States, ostensibly, at least in the visible space program. And so we literally followed in the footsteps of Anki and Marduk and went to the moon and discovered things that they're still not telling us about. But anyway, so it's an idea. We don't necessarily have to have a war, although that's probably what we did in the past. If you look at the Trojan War, the gods were fighting on both sides of that war, but rather a competition that, you know, I'm not sure of this idea enough to know even what I'm saying, but the idea that we had an identity of ourselves as a group within like a fractal of the nations, that fractal of human, fractal next step nations, fractal of planet Earth, fractal of, you know, these octaves of exopolitics up to the solar system. You know, maybe it's something that is coming that might be inevitable, but it's an interesting thought, an interesting idea. I would much prefer that it would be friendly competition of who can, you know, close feed and house everybody the best, who can clean up their pollution the best. I'd love to see a friendly competition versus a war. I think that would be something that would be interesting and helpful. So that's just my throwing some ideas out. I think this is an interesting idea to find out more about, and I really thank you, Jeff, for coming on and telling us about apparently what's being talked about in the military that, again, they're not telling us rank and file people, but thank you. Sasha.
Well, yeah, it's an interesting juxtaposition, the rivalry between the Nerda and the Russians and the USA and Mardukian energy. When I was in Fiji, there was these two moieties, groups of people in the village, and they used the competition between these people. Each side was building half of the roof for the district house, and whoever got theirs done first, the other side had to make a big feast for them. And so, too, I think that the Russians and the Americans have much to share. What we have to remember is that the deal was that NATO would not further encroach on Russian territory, and yet it has by admitting several Soviet republics in NATO and stuff. And so the Russians do have a position which does warrant some kind of intelligent compromise among people that don't want to blow each other themselves up, in my opinion. And I think a good way to start is what's known as unilateral gifting. When the Soviets and the American troop tanks were nose-to-nose along their border, trying a social science experiment, our leaders said, pull our tanks back 5 miles. So the Russians were left on the line looking like aggressors. So pretty soon they moved back 5, too. And they did this process. Basically, this is the process. You give something to begin with. You give Jerusalem to the international, to everybody. You start with gifting. We can make peace. We can reach out to each other. I certainly think so.
And Jeff, final word to you.
Yes, I listen. If you decide, if we have some other time, some conversation, maybe I have some new kind of information. I didn't tell much about Mayan calendar and what I believe we enter of age of Aquarius, and Aquarius he is empty on December 21st, 2012, we enter age of Aquarius. And if you believe that we believe Mayan calendar from Mayans, and Mayans' great god was Quetzalcoatl, what means feathered snake. And snake we know as a symbol of wisdom and knowledge, and this symbol of family of Enkili. And when you remember in Bible, Jesus was talking to his disciples, he said, be simple as a dove and wise as a serpent. Even Jesus said that. So this other proof, Mayan calendar, it belonged to somebody of NT family. And now we start age of Aquarius, what means age of Enki. And what I believe, probably, and my research also show, Enki this time, he give power to his son Marduk. Because last time, in very beginning of reign of Marduk, Ninurta and Nergal, they detonate nuclear missiles in Middle East and destroy many cities and spaceport in Sinai Peninsula. So actually Marduk, he didn't have chance to reign his complete term. So what I believe this time, as we enter age of Enki, he gave this reign to his son Marduk. So we have to be especially more thankful and more attentive to what we're doing. So I believe this even increase necessity of temple of Marduk to be rebuilt in Arizona.
Marduk has basically told Michael Lee Hill that he is truly, he feels bad about all this suffering that has gone on in his name, and he wishes to make amends and cooperate. And maybe she is here to help him, too, in making this a peaceful and cooperative time.
And we're just about out of time, but I want to thank everybody for joining us today on Aquarian Radio. Thank you, Karen, Christine Patrick, and Dr. Sasha Alex Lesson, and Jeff Latour. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing your last name correctly, but thank you so much, Jeff, for coming on our show and sharing your wisdom and information. And I am backing disclosure and the age of Aquarius, and peace and universal love, freedom, and higher levels of consciousness. That's what I'm voting for, and I see it coming, this new age of love. And with that,
yes,
aloha,
yes.
Love, and blessings to everybody.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful
Mahalo
weekend.
Mahalo nui vo. Mahalo nui vo.
Mahalo. Thank you.
Mahalo.
Bye-bye.